You're saying that humans need fantasies to make life bearable?
No. Humans need fantasy to be human. To be the place where the falling angel meets the rising ape.
With tooth fairies, hogfathers.
Yes. As practice, you have to start out learning to believe the little lies.
So we can believe the big ones.
Yes. Justice, mercy, duty, that sort of thing.
They're not the same at all.
You think so? Then take the universe and grind it down to the finest powder and sieve it through the finest sieve, and then show me one atom of justice, one molecule of mercy. And yet, you try to act as if there is some ideal order in the world, as if there is some rightness in the universe by which it may be judged.
But people have got to believe that. What's the point?
You need to believe in things that aren't true. How else can they become?
International Detective Dragons from Outer Space.
Hello and welcome, or welcome back to International Detective Dragons from Outer Space. I'm Anum5, and thank you very much for downloading and listening to episode 67. The question for this installment was, how many lies do you recognize immediately when they come from the media? When was the last time you spotted one? In this episode, we'll hear from Fred Trellis of the Harmony Factory podcast, James, Dan, Agent Desilu, and Sarah. Breathe deep, hold on tight, take it all in as it happens, 'cause that's life. Also, please hang around here and listen to the show. Back in a bit.
And now it's time for another visit with a story lady.
Hello, children. Today we're going to hear the story I call The Enchanted Tree. Once upon a time, there was a young prince who took a ride through a magic forest. There he met a witch who changed him into a maple tree, and he would remain a tree until a beautiful girl agreed to marry him. The prince was heartbroken. How would any beautiful girl ever marry a tree? How could he speak to her? Then one day, years later, a beautiful young girl was walking through the magic forest. And the tree prince knew that he must speak to her. He tried and tried until the wind rustling through his branches made a sound like, "I love you, I love you." The young girl had not noticed the tree prince before, but now she turned around and walked up to it. She then, ever so gently, carved her initials in his chest.
Thank you, story lady. Be sure and listen next time, boys and girls, when the story lady will read aloud from the Cincinnati telephone directory.
Well. Ooh, la-dee-da. And is it Anum 5, finally? And does he think he can just wander off for a month, forgetting about his responsibilities, forgetting completely about his listeners, and just suddenly decide, oh, no more buttered scones for me, Major, I'm off to play the grand piano? Alright, yeah. Woulda, shoulda, coulda. I did a bad thing. I don't blame myself too terribly much. I did get a cold. I mean, not just a cold, not just, oh, I've caught myself a sniffle. It was, it was really kind of severe there. Not something that you would check yourself in for, but holy crap. And Mrs. Adam 5, or rather I should say Auntie Ed, of For the Horde Radio, went through the same thing. It was pretty bad. I bet a bunch of you out there got sick too. And it was just as bad for you too. But you didn't go wandering off and, like, not doing the podcast that you were supposed to do. And then just think, well, I can just come back. All right, I did a bad thing. I've done a bad thing. Episode 67 is coming out late here, way late. What's the other bad thing? I did two bad things. I did three bad things. Where's my Spanish Inquisition hat? I did three bad things. What was the second bad thing? I didn't say hello. Hi. Honestly, this is not a running bit. This is not a gag. It's just something that I happen to remember as I go. Sometimes I say hello first. You know that. All right, the third bad thing was probably playing that opening that I played. But I gotta tell you, folks, there's no other way to do it justice. There's no other way. You know, you can't give a synopsis of a moment like that. I'm going to play it again. I'm going to play it again in the place of the old-time radio snippet. Because you're going to notice a little bit of a change just for this episode. I'm sorry, the goons will not be in episode 67. We will have a goon-free show. And in its place, we'll have the story lady just for this episode. They're complete shows in themselves. They're 1 minute apiece. Wherever we have a break, that's what we'll get. What can I say? I had to play that because I've been thinking a lot about it lately. I think a lot of folks have been thinking a lot about it lately, and it kind of has to do with the question for this episode. Maybe even the previous episode. What forms your reality? For this episode, what lies do you immediately recognize from the media? I'm peddling back away from that question, even though I asked it for this show. I'm peddling back away from it. Because it almost sounds as if I deserve to have someone walk up to me and say, well, gee, Annam, welcome to the world. What are you whining about? You're stating the bleeding obvious. All right, maybe so, but where the falling angel meets the rising ape. I think I said something like that in episode 1. I knew I got it from somewhere. Couldn't remember where. I guess it was there. My recommendation to you is go pick up the film Hogfather, based on the novel by Terry Pratchett. Go pick up Hogfather, the novel by Terry Pratchett. See, it's moments, it's messages and moments and little snippets of text from so many of his books that are like that, that just, I don't know. Am I easily impressed, or just does that just seem a little bit insightful, or is it shallow philosophy? I don't know. Maybe you can tell me. So I've been away for so long that all this stuff that's going to come out of my mouth now as precursors to the emails, this news, it's not news. It's olds. It's all old. You all know about it already. Not absolutely all of it, but of course, you know, there's some high points here that I should cover, and I'm going to cover them. So let me get to the top of my list here. The Best Infotainment Podcast. It's been a while since Dragon Con ended, and so you all probably know already that the Encaffeinated One of the Weird Show won. Won what? Won the Parsec Award. I know this for a fact because I laid eyes on it, because he took it out of his car before he left and showed it to me. Yes, we got together and talked about it a little bit at the Time to Eat Diner in Bridgewater, New Jersey. I should take this opportunity, first of all, to congratulate thoroughly and heartily the Encaffeinated One for winning that Parsec Award. And I'm also going to take the time to tell you all that this is a particularly patient man. Because I live in New Jersey. He doesn't.
The thing I most want to know right now is, the big secret is, where the heck can I meet Adam Five? This is the Encaffeinated One. Some are on the road between here and there. I'm currently traveling northward somewhere. I think I'm still in North Carolina. Coming back from a very fun Dragon Con to meet up with Adam Five, and I'm hopefully going to answer some of these questions that have been piling up that I haven't gotten to. One note that I'm very, very proud of, The Weird Show won the Parsec for Best Infotainment Podcast, and I'm still over the moon. Anyway, talk to you later now.
He went out of his way to drive into the heart of New Jersey, in the Somerset area, and waited for me to find him along this route. Well, that's a story in itself, but a very, very patient man, and we got together and we went into that diner and just had a good little chat, and that was a while ago. That was a good long while ago. So yes, this is old news, but absolute fanfare and congratulations to The Weird Show. What next on the list? Fred Trellis, whom we have heard from recently, last couple of podcasts, has launched his podcast. You may have noted it on the index page for IDDFOS. There is a link there, of course, and he has a permanent link on the right-hand side. It's the Harmony Factory, or Harmony Factory Bopac. I'm not quite sure precisely how he wants that referred to. I kind of like Harmony Factory all by itself for a podcast name, but I think its full official name is Harmony Factory Bopac. Not real positive about that, but I do know, I'm positive about this, he has launched it. Go ahead, give it a listen. Follow the link, download it, check it out. Send him some feedback, let him know what you think. Next on the list. What is next on the list? George Robb has won the Podcast Peer Award. Way to go, George Robb. I have a feeling, now I could be wrong about this, but I have a feeling that while he may very well be proud about winning the Podcast Peer Award, he's probably feeling a little bit better about having gone to the Galapagos Islands. That whole experience. But you would have to go and listen to his show in order to find out about that. And, hey, I'd recommend it. What else on my list? This is not necessarily in order, but we were on awards, and we were on new beginnings. And now we are moving on to a thank you. A heartfelt and a deep thank you to Simon of the Curio. for this, the most recent launching of the open-ended series, open-ended series number one, during which he and I discussed the topic of UFOs, which is really kind of interesting because, I mean, in retrospect, to me, it's kind of interesting because really what we did discuss was the topic itself, for the most part. I don't think we actually nailed down specific cases. I mean, we probably touched on Roswell a little bit. We probably touched on a few other things, but we didn't actually go into this sighting, that sighting in detail and pick anything apart. What we talked about mainly was the topic of UFOs. The implications of it, the sociology behind it, the thinking behind it, and we were both probably a bit more on the skeptical side than I think than either one of us expected to be. But that's an open-ended series, and hopefully, once it gets back underway, we'll continue with that topic. And if I can get some other folks in on the discussion, it's very tough to get people together, particularly as we approach the holidays. Other folks in on the discussion, either singly or hopefully we can get maybe Simon back on board. Depends on timing. All has to do with what people can do when. But I thank you very much indeed for to Simon of thecurio.co.uk for taking time out to record the open-ended series. Check that out. It's the feed installment just before this one. Got another thank you that goes out to Mark Kinney of All Games Considered, because he has set up and is GMing Spirit of the Century via Skype. Got into the game. I got into a Skype game. So a big thank you very much to Mark Kinney for setting that up. We just recently had our character creation session. I did record it. The audio quality is abysmal. I mean, really bad. And that's my fault entirely. I'm not sure whether it'll improve. Going to record a couple more games and we'll see, a couple more sessions and we'll see how things work out. But I'm sure one way or another it'll end up on somebody's feed. If not this one, then... well, possibly All Games Considered if things get slow over there. I don't know. I have a feeling Mark Kinney's got quite a bit on his plate already, but we'll see where it goes. But it was a lot of fun. Looking forward to the next session. So thanks again to Mark Kinney. Another thank you. A thank you to Core New Media. Why? Well, there's a D&D campaign going on over there. The Mirror campaign. Check it out at www.corerpg.com. Walt Snyder and Mark Reed, you know him as Thayan probably, and Zach. There's an actual play, series of sessions going on over there. A D&D campaign. Let me quote from the Groovecast site, because there's a little paragraph there that Thayan wrote in. Zach and I are part of a new actual play game run via Skype. Check it out over at www.corerpg.com. In it, we take an irreverent take on tabletop gaming. It's about 60% out of character, 30% gaming, and 10% something else. Take a listen to our episode 0 to find out what it's all about. Why am I thanking them? Because my promo was played in episode 4 of that D&D campaign. So thank you. Thank you very much. I had a good time listening to it. Is it explicit? Yes. Is it work safe? No. Still fun. I have written down here that my, and this is I'm moving along now with the thank yous. I have written down here that my promo was played on the most recent episode of the Wandering Geek podcast. I don't think that's true anymore, because when I wrote that, it was quite a while ago. But thank you very much, Kurt. What other news do we have here? We have news that Mick Bradley is now a part of the Canon Puncture podcast. Most excellent. Looking forward to hearing some episodes with Mr. B and how they go. Does that mean it's the end of the game that may be? No, actually, I don't think so. I think it's going to become part and parcel, or in tandem with, or incorporated into something like that. It's not going away, basically. So I was glad to hear that, and glad to hear that he's joined the Canon Puncture crew over there. More thank yous. I have another thank you. Thank you to the Bear Swarm podcast, because they said nice stuff about International Detective Dragons from Outer Space. Thank you very much, guys, for the kind words. Folks should go to the Bear Swarm podcast and check them out. That's Rob and Mike and Matt. Once in a while, Beasley, Dan, Jacob, Kirk, Sarah, Artemis. Not always that many people, but regardless, fun to listen to. You can tell just from their promo. Well, you're going to hear that sometime during this show. Also have a big thank you to say to Sam Chupp, especially. I mean, I hadn't actually been listening to 12 Volt Theater because I didn't know about it until the Encaffeinated one let me know about 12 Volt Theater. And in bonus episode 3, there's an interview with Sam Chupp, and in it he said all kinds of nice things about International Detective Dragons from Outer Space. Thank you, Mr. Sam Chupp. I appreciate that. That's excellent. What other news? Other news. The Global Geek Podcast is no longer the global boy, that's tough to say. No wonder they changed the name. The Global Geek Podcast is no longer that. It is now the Aussie Geek Podcast. Same people, same show format, just as much fun. It's just that they've got a different feed, and I'll go ahead and change the link to reflect that. Very interesting show. They always come up with new and interesting stuff to check out in tech and software and just in general what's happening on the net and in both Mac and PC. Worth a listen. What else is worth a listen? Stephen Fry. Now, I wouldn't have actually known about this if it weren't for some correspondence that I had with Fred Trellis very early on. He was making mention of some other folks that he had heard in podcasts. Stephen Fry was one of the names, and I thought, what? He's got a podcast? Well, in a way, kind of, sort of, yeah, he's got 5 episodes out. He doesn't put them out very regularly, like I Should Talk. But those that he does have out are just really wonderful to listen to. I will put a link in the Kurikatangatongatongs to get to the Stephen Fry podcasts. Adam, who is Stephen Fry? Well, there are two high points that hit my mind. In the Blackadder series 3, where he is butler to Prince George, Stephen Fry played the Duke of Wellington in the episode where Prince George, I think it's the closing episode, actually, of the series, where Prince George is supposed to have a duel with Wellington. More recently, you would remember him as the late-night comic talk show host in V for Vendetta. So check that out. Very good podcast. Very entertaining. All right. I think we can move on now. I've only got 2 more things to say. One, the background music you've been listening to It's from an album called Horizons. They call themselves Heavy Mellow. It's Paul Hadley and Barry Sulkin, guitar duets. Very nice stuff. Very talented guys. Before we go to break, because when we come back from break, we're going to start with emails, I have one thing to ask. Where has Haxor gone? Why have I not heard from my arch nemesis, Haxor? What is he planning? It's getting me nervous because we haven't heard from him. And I mean, a whole month has gone by since the last installment. I know it was the open-ended series, but even before that, I hadn't heard from Haxor. It's been a long while, which means something's being plotted. Just wondering. Back in a bit.
Once again, it's time for another visit with a story lady.
Hello, boys and girls. Today we're going to hear the story I call The Brave Little Tailor. Once upon a time, there was a little tailor. And one day while he was working in his shop, there were some flies buzzing around him. And so he picked up a fly swatter and killed 7 of the flies with one blow. When he told someone that he had killed 7 with one blow, the story spread. But as rumors will grow, people forgot that the little tailor had only killed 7 flies. And so he gained a reputation as a brave giant killer. Then one day, a real giant came to the little village, and the people of the village sent the little tailor to face the giant. Though he was very, very frightened, the little tailor did not let the giant see this, but shouted, "You had better go away, giant, for I am the great giant killer who killed 7 with one blow." And the giant turned around and went away. And the town had a big celebration for the tailor until later that night when the giant came back with 8 of his buddies.
Thank you, Story Lady. Be listening next time, boys and girls, when the Story Lady tells us the story of the fairy princess and her magic bunny.
All right, now, let's get to it. Let's begin with emails from Fred Trellis. Now, there are 2 here, and I really hope he doesn't mind, but I'm going to read both of them. The second one almost consists of a retraction of his first. Not really a retraction, but he doesn't consider this first one to be an actual answer to the question because he doesn't believe he fully understood or interpreted correctly the question when he wrote it. But I find it very interesting nonetheless. So I'm going to read it anyway because it too is very good. These 2 emails from Fred Trellis. Subject line, "How much am I being lied to?" And he writes, "I have a glib one-line answer to this, but if I use it, I am lying. The problem is not in the answer, but in the usage of the verb to lie. My answer is, everyone tells me untruths, constantly. You see how carefully I avoided the use of the word lie? If I said that people were lying to me constantly, that would be untrue. However untrue my statement, I would not be lying, and therein is the rub, the nub of the issue. Indeed, you could say it's the rub of the nub, although I understand that would get you arrested in some countries. In common parlance, people use the word lying to cover many different situations, situations which are better served by more specific words. I want to tease apart the given meaning of to lie so that I can explain those circumstances where I am lied to in common, but not in strict usage. It's not mere semantics. Read Pinker. We are homo thinkalotus, and our thoughts are clothed in words, expressed in words, consist of words. The more woolly, vague, or confused our language, then the more our thoughts are woolly, vague, or confused, and our concepts unformed. So, a dictionary definition. Lie, noun,
an intentionally false statement. All the dictionaries I checked have something similar. I strongly suspect that the working definition that most people use day to day, and in this case only, I consider myself a man of the people, since I too use the same working definition, is lie, noun, a false statement. Common usage, a false statement. Dictionary definition, an intentionally false statement. That one missing word is the problem. If I answered, yes, everyone lies to me all the time, I would be lying. If I answer, as I did, everyone tells me untruths constantly, then I did not really answer your question. Or rather, questions. The first question was, how often do you assume you are lied to? My answer, constantly. The second, when did you last say to yourself that newspaper report or whatever just handed you a big fat lie? The answer, almost never. It is the intention that is difficult. I cannot judge the intention of the reporter as being intentionally to deceive me the majority of the time. The untruth stems from the reporter's ignorance, or self-deception, or a third category, which I'll get to in a second. Let's not get into an infinite regression here. The reporter's ignorance, or self-deception, may have its roots in a third party's lies. The third party's lies are also ignorance and self-deception, founded on a fourth party's lies. The fourth on the fifths. The fifths on the sixth. There is, in the theory of 6 degrees of separation, no chain of contactability longer than six, so I need progress no further. It should, however, now be obvious. I can categorically state that my self-deceptions are thus directly caused through a mere 6 degrees of separation by lies perpetrated by Carla Bruni, Vladimir Putin, and Juan Lee. In case you did not know, Juan Lee is the proprietor of a bicycle repair shop in Beijing, but no less guilty for that. So, people are, in the main, not lying, but they are telling me untruths. The third category, which I promised to get to, is as follows. Even when they are lying, and this applies a great deal in the UFO theater, 9/11 conspiracy, and so forth, the intention of the false statement is not necessarily targeted to cause me harm, distress, cost, or pain. We frequently overestimate our own importance in other people's eyes, whilst being quite clear in our own minds that our concerns are far more important than anyone else's. Ally McBeal was asked by Georgia, "Why are your problems bigger than anyone else's?" To which Ally replied, "Because they are mine." If there is a cover-up, what is being covered up is more often incompetence than conspiracy, failure more than misconduct, stupidity rather than culpability. The person telling the lie has made a judgment, possibly unconsciously, that the cost to them of the truth is far greater than the benefit to us, and the benefit of a lie to them is greater than the disbenefit to us. They are intentionally deceptive, but their intention is to cause least overall harm. Thus, even though everyone lies to me all the time, I can remain positive, optimistic, and trusting. And that's no lie. Fred Trellis.
I love that. That's just fun verbal gymnastics, and that's why I read it, because it was a fun. That's just a fun piece. Very neat, very compact, very self-contained, and very entertaining. Now the second letter gets probably more along the lines of the spirit of the question itself, and it's quite a bit darker, actually.
How many lies do you recognize immediately when they come from the media? When was the last time you spotted one? I realized I had not directly answered these questions, and they are interesting and revealing. In short, I am incapable of recognizing lies from the media. So I have the default assumption that everything concerning politics is a direct lie, or at least a severe untruth. Anything which later seems to check out from multiple sources, I then accept as having a kernel of truth. Non-political things, such as how many people died in Katrina, why so-and-so should leave the Big Brother house, which August was the wettest of all recorded time, the score in last night's soccer game, I tentatively accept as probably true without requiring further corroboration. When was the last time I spotted a lie? There are three examples which I am compelled to point out. The first time I spotted a lie which made me ashamed of my nationality, and the latest which made me ashamed of my species. When I was a young sprog, I read a comic, a sort of comic book for kids, called The Victor.
And he provides a link, which of course will be in the Gudukatingadongadungs.
Whilst American kids grew up with Superman and the Hulk, I grew up with Alf Tupper, a very poor working man, whose day job varied. However, the story construction was always similar. Whatever his day job, hauling sacks of coal, digging ditches, welding steamships together, something exhausting, dirty, and menial in any case, something always went wrong, making him late to go to the sporting event. So he would often run to the sports stadium, eating fish and chips on the way, and there be looked down upon by the clean, spiffing toffs, in spanking new clothes and running shoes, who openly despised him. He then proceeded to beat them over a distance of 1 mile. There is a common delusion in the English psyche. The plucky underdog, who is happy despite the misery of his surroundings and situation, is a reverse snob, and ultimately gets the last laugh. Total masculine bovine excreta, of course. The lower orders, who deserve to remain under, and are happier that way. As a 9 to 11-year-old, I swallowed it whole, and that lie became a part of my psyche, a part of my cultural baggage. Alf Tupper was one of the rare civilians in The Victor. The comic was mainly peopled with soldiers, sailors, and airmen from the Second World War. Or rather, it was peopled with habitual heroes, people who did something heroic twice a day before walking their dog through a woodland sunset to a local pub where they bought foaming tankards of beer for the grateful and admiring local farm laborers. Look again at the name of the comic, The Victor, the one who achieved victory. The Victor was ultimately a propaganda sheet for World War II and British contribution thereto. The lie that we stood alone, that we saved the entire world from tyranny, the story of the underdog, writ on a national scale, I swallowed whole as well. This was a lie I spotted myself without prompting after some 25 years of accepting it as one of the cornerstone truths of my heritage. That was the first lie, the one that for many years made me ashamed on behalf of my nationality. The second and third lies make me ashamed of my species. For many years I did not read newspapers, watch TV, or pay attention to the news in any way, convinced it was all lies. I never was good at spotting lies, and additionally I am now severely out of practice, so the two examples of species-level shame come from lies pointed out to me by broadcasters and writers, podcasters and bloggers, commentators and comedians. Lie one. Before this latest in a long, almost unbroken chain of military intervention in foreign countries, Tony Blair and George Bush were clearly telling lies. Even mainstream media now accept this. Lie two. HIV-infected condoms sent to kill Africans, claims Archbishop.
And there is a link to that specific article as well. Yes, an African Archbishop of the Catholic Church went public with his claim that condom manufacturers in Europe, two countries he claims, but he wouldn't name them, were intentionally infecting them with HIV in order to kill Africans. Yes, you have to read the article, and, well, you don't have to, but just get an idea of just how appalling it is that someone who is listened to and in very high authority would go public and make a claim as outrageous as this.
Despicable beyond redemption. Both lies kill relatively innocent folk for nothing more tangible than the ideas in the heads of the perpetrators. I chose these examples because of the significance to me and my worldview, but also the timing and the development of my worldview. Only after writing them down did the thought occur to me. Bush and Blair have prayed together over the Iran war. Both lies have religious underpinnings.
I see Iran written down there. I wonder if you mean Iraq. It might be Iraq. I certainly do hope that there isn't going to be an Iran war. I wonder if my writing to all of my representatives all over again, just like I did last time, is going to have the same effect. Fred continues.
This made me sit back and gaze into the distance for some time before finding the conclusion to this text. Thank you, NM5. I have truly learned something right in this instant. Ultimately, and very broadly, the world is divided into three compartments. The various Christian sects account for about a third. The various other religions, mainly Muslim and Hindu, account for about a third, and non-theist about a third. At least two of those thirds are together the biggest lie ever told. That is the greatest lie I ever spotted. I spotted it as a lie just now, thus making it the latest lie I spotted. I am 50 years old, and nakedly ashamed of some others of my species.
And that, the second of two emails from Fred, like I said, second one's quite a bit darker. And what can I say? I mean, so far as the greatest lie that Fred has ever spotted, I suppose you could go back and give a listen to the religion podcast. Actually, that was a two-parter. There were two. It was a part A and a part B, where IDDFOS actually delved into religion. But I'm absolutely on board with you on the death of innocence. I mean, not just the killing, but whole lifetimes made miserable because of ideas held as supposedly sacred or false, ideas that are just blatantly untrue that can be acted upon with great power by people with great power. Bush, Blair, and archbishops, respectively. I don't know whether respect should be used in that sentence or not, but thank you. Thank you very much, Fred, for direct treatment of this episode's question. Not just food for thought. There's a pretty big spread on that table. That's a feast for thought. And we're going to go to a break real quick, and when we come back, we will hear from James. Back in a bit.
It's time now for another visit with a story lady.
Hello, children. Today we're going to hear the story I call The Lost Continent of Atlantis. Once upon a time, a very long, long time ago, somewhere in the Atlantic Ocean, west of Gibraltar, there was a mighty kingdom known as Atlantis. Atlantis was very rich and very powerful and was blessed with every beauty that any land could ever have. But the citizens of Atlantis were very, very wicked. Each day they spent more and more of their time cheating and stealing from their fellow man. Soon Atlantis was known far and wide as the most evil and immoral of all lands, and was such a disgrace that all the gods on Mount Olympus decided that Atlantis could no longer be a blot on the face of the earth. And so they sent a great disaster, and the entire kingdom of Atlantis sank to the bottom of the sea, severely injuring Richard Basehart, Lloyd Bridges, and a couple of herring.
Thank you, Story Lady. Be listening next time, boys and girls, when the Story Lady will tell you how to get into a pay toilet without a dime.
Okay, this next up from James, and it deals with something I brought up in episode 66, which was the Electric Wars, which I messed up, by the way. This will be pointed out in the emails to follow. I of course I was going completely from my Swiss cheese memory, but I wasn't crazy there when I was talking about an elephant being electrocuted because of this distribution war between Edison and it was Westinghouse. I was informed. Well, let me get to the email. Here we go. It's from James. Subject is
Burn Topsy Burn. Nope, Adam, you're not out of your mind. There was an elephant electrocuted at Coney Island back in 1903.
And there's a link there, which will be in the Goodigadingadongadongs.
And even more details here.
And another link.
And it was George Westinghouse who was the rival.
Yes. George Westinghouse was Edison's direct rival in that war between alternating current and direct current as a distribution method for electric power in the United States. He also provided a YouTube video link to the electrocution. This is on YouTube? A 1903 electrocution of an elephant on YouTube. I did see it. It's not the highest quality, and honestly, good. I don't think I really want all that much detail. James continues.
Sorry, I just don't have any sympathy for the asshole who fed Topsy a lit cigarette. He got what was coming to him, and I'm sure the other two trainers who Topsy killed were probably just as cruel.
If you get into the articles, the information links that he provided, you discover that Topsy was slated to be destroyed as a dangerous animal, regardless. It wasn't just some randomly picked elephant. Although, from what you read, you get the impression that it wasn't Topsy that should have been destroyed, but some creatures that were on two legs at the time. Along the same subject, well, and exactly the same subject, actually, this email next from... Oh, thank you. Sorry. Thank you, James. A very thorough, very comprehensive list of links to flesh out what I got started in episode 66. And along the same lines, this email from Dan.
Hey, Adam. You kind of had it mixed up, as Edison was the champion of DC, direct current, while his employee, Tesla, was the inventor of alternating current. Tesla ended up giving more or less his AC patent to George Westinghouse in order to have his tech adapted for the nation's first large-scale hydroelectric operations at Niagara Falls. Alternating current got the nod at Niagara Falls over direct current because alternating current can be transmitted over much longer distances. A DC power grid would require a power plant on every other block, and Edison wanted to build them. Can you imagine why? I can. Cha-ching! The downside of alternating current, as we all know, is that it can kill you if you get a shock, which Thomas Edison exploited by electrocuting horses, stray dogs, and, as you mentioned, in at least a few cases, elephants. I think Edison more or less invented the electric chair by way of his counter-alternating current struggle and had quite an elaborate PR campaign to get people to say that guy was Westinghoused, as opposed to being merely electrocuted. So... yeah. Edison or any of those robber barons of the Gilded Age would have, in the parlance of the now, pwned Mr. Trump. Nonetheless, despite his evil efforts, Niagara ended up going alternating current, But Edison was contracted to manufacture all the wire for the project. Thus my little joke about Tom's wire selling.
And Dan provides details on the alternating current versus direct current debate in two links. And he continues along a different topic.
And how tragic that you never had any power records as a kid. They were mostly audio plays delivered on 45 RPM records with comic books to read along. The production values were extraordinarily quick and dirty. The one we hit on the MOL CD has an actor's mic switched off during the second act. Did they notice and redo it? No, they left it that way and pressed the vinyl anyway. Found this fantastic page below, lots of MP3s and history.
And another link.
This guy who runs the site, in my opinion, should be an IDDFOS listener. Thanks for the plug on the tunes. Keep on with the job hunt. You've got podcasts to listen to. Peace, Dan.
Thank you very much, Dan. And actually, we are going to hear a piece of Dan's music as the closing music of the show. He made mention of it in the last podcast, in episode 66, rather. And it will be from Against All Flags, Monuments of Leisure. The title of the song is Fortress on the Moon, but I'll reintroduce that when we get to it later on. Well, at the end of the show, when we get to closing music. So, very cool. Very good. Thank you, Dan. And I think we're going to jump to another break here. Back in a bit.
Time now for another visit with a story lady.
Hello, boys and girls. Today we're going to hear the story I call The Magic Cloak. Once upon a time, there was a soldier who was on his way into battle. On his way, he saw a very old man who was begging for food. He stopped and gave the old man some of the food that he was carrying. Thank you, young man, said the old man. I can reward you for your kindness, for I am a magician. I will give you a magic cloak, and as long as you wear this magic cloak, no enemy soldier will ever harm you. And with that, the old man gave the soldier a magnificent velvet cloak trimmed with lace and lined with sparkling jewels. Putting this wonderful magic cloak around his shoulders, the soldier rode on toward the battlefield. He reached the battlefield early the next morning and reported for duty wearing his magnificent velvet cloak and was immediately given a Section 8 medical discharge.
Thank you, Story Lady. Be listening next time, boys and girls, when the Story Lady will turn state's evidence against the Mafia.
And back we are. This next email up is from Derek from New Mexico. Derek from Tech, who's Agent Desi Lou. Subject matter?
IDDFOS reviews. Hey, Adam, how's it going? I've been working on some episode reviews on my blog, as you put out episodes. Give them a look over. If I missed anything, let me know. Anyway, it was a good way for me to get more content on my site and a good way to promote IDDFOS without being a podcaster. Hopefully it works. I really like the open-ended discussion. Keep those coming. Take it easy. Derek, Agent Desi Lou.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Most excellent. I checked out the reviews he's talking about. Superb. Doesn't have to agree with everything. Agrees with a lot of stuff. Finds it interesting. Check out the blog, for crying out loud. We've linked to it before. We'll link to it again. Actually, what I'm probably going to do is end up putting it on the right hand side with the other sites that are worth visiting for sure. It's eatsbugs.wordpress.com. Yes, eatsbugs. One word. EATSBUGS. .wordpress.com for Agent Desi Lou's blog. And I appreciate that. Excellent. A great way for people to find IDDFOS and vice versa. So thank you very much, Agent Desi Lou. This next email is from Sarah, and I'm glad I'm getting it in just in time here. It should have come out weeks ago to allow people time to prepare, but shame on me. Still, if you've downloaded this in time, there's still time. to participate in this. Participate in what? Read the email. Subject:
Terry Pratchett in Second Life. Hi, Annam. Just spotted this post on the Second Life forum and didn't want to hesitate to send it to you. Noticed this over at Second Life University, and then read a bit more.
And there is a link to the article on terrypratchett.co.uk regarding Second Life. Quote,
in a unique opportunity for Discworld fans across the globe, Terry will appear on The Nation and take part in a live question and answer session with fans on October 9th at 8 p.m. BST.
I guess that's British Standard Time? The Nation is his most recent book.
Prior to that, on the Sim of Elysian Isle, you can sign up for a treasure hunt that runs from tomorrow until October 10th. You'll need to sign up for Terry Pratchett's fans group to be able to access the Nation Sim.
Oh, okay. The Nation is a sim. It's a specific aspect or area of Second Life that is going to house the event or host the event or essentially be the place to be in Second Life in order to participate. And there is a link to that as well, which of course will go in the Kudikatingatangatungs.
Anybody going to participate?
I'm certainly going to try.
Best of days, Sarah.
Thank you very much, Sarah. Wow. I couldn't even imagine what I would ask the guy. I couldn't even imagine what, I mean, the list of questions would be very, very short, because I had no idea what I would say. Just essentially, probably the only thing I'd really want to say to the guy in person or even in type in a situation like that is simply, thank you. Thank you for not remaining a technical writer at a nuclear power plant. Thank you for moving on to writing fantasy novels. Essentially, social commentary in the guise of humorous fantasy novels. Thank you very much, Sarah, for the heads up on that. All right, what are we going to do? What am I going to do? I think we're going to go to our last break before what would normally be the old-time radio snippet, but as I said earlier, I'm not going to play that. I'm going to play the snippet that I started this actual piece of audio with, the episode 67, very top. It's from The Hogfather. It's from the film. I hope I don't get in trouble for playing it, but what I'd really like to do is encourage people to actually go out and get it. Or if not the film, the book itself. Back in a bit.
Truth is stranger than fiction. This is the truth. This is Ripley. Believe it or not. The women snake charmers of Pakistan never use musical instruments to charm the reptiles. They employ only the voice. The reason for this is that a serpent's whispered advice led to Eve's downfall in the Garden of Eden, believe it or not. In a moment, I'll tell you about the Bridge of Death. One of the weirdest bridges in the world is the Bridge of Death, which is an arch over the river Ludius near Kleti, Greece. It is 59 feet long and 23 feet high, and is all that remains of an ancient Roman bridge that was looted of all its other stones by the local farmers. The looting continued until they came to the realization that all of those who had carried away the stones from the bridge had died within the year, believe it or not.
Okay. As I said, no old-time radio snippet for this episode, but rather this 1 minute, 52-second snippet from a film that I've watched a couple of times in the past month or so, and that you heard at the very top of the show. Here it is again.
You're saying that humans need fantasies to make life bearable?
No. Humans need fantasy to be human. To be the place where the falling angel meets the rising ape.
With tooth fairies, hogfathers.
Yes. As practice, you have to start out learning to believe the little lies.
So we can believe the big ones?
Yes. Justice, mercy, duty, that sort of thing.
They're not the same at all.
You think so? Then take the universe and grind it down to the finest powder and sieve it through the finest sieve, and then show me one atom of justice, one molecule of mercy. And yet, you try to act as if there is some ideal order in the world, as if there is some rightness in the universe by which it may be judged.
But people have got to believe that. What's the point?
You need to believe in things that aren't true. How else can they become?
The character of Death, which actually is who was speaking there, the woman that was speaking is actually his granddaughter. I could get into the intricacies of the whole running theme of Death as a character in the Pratchett novels, but I'm not going to. I'll just say that the character of Death is probably the most effective mouthpiece for the author throughout most of his work, and usually has the most incisive things to say about the human condition and humanity in general, people in general, behavior, oddities, strangeness. One of the other lines from that novel is,
"Humans are incredibly fascinating. In a universe so full of wonders, they've actually managed to invent boredom."
Belief. Belief. Credulity. Realities. What forms a reality? Is it media? Is it newspapers? Is it the radio? Is it what you hear from your friends? What you see on television? Is it almost entirely what you see on television? Well, the entire world then doesn't share that reality, obviously, because the entire world does not have television. Yes, even in 2008. But you know that already. You don't need me to tell you that. Personal realities, though, based on what people take in and what they believe. Belief's been talked about a lot lately, or thought about a lot lately. Belief in what politicians are telling you and saying to you. The show they're putting on before this major event coming up, in the United States anyway. Who do you believe? Trashing any belief in cryptozoology, or the party costume stuffed with roadkill. Who do you believe? You know, the people that have heard what they believe to be a Bigfoot, or seen close up what they believe to be a Bigfoot. The people pulled over on the side of the road with a dozen or 20 others watching a giant, massive craft move across a valley. They know what they saw. They watched it move. Who do you believe? 6 billion different universes. I've touched on this before. I'm positive. I remember hearing myself saying it. Every life saved is the world entire saved. What's the line from? It's a line from Schindler's List. Who saves one life saves the world entire. Basically, it's every person has their own point of view and their own perception of the world, which essentially makes up, it's the world to them. It's the world to you. It's the world to me. 6 billion different universes. Because there's six billion different points of view, but there's shared reality there. So we believe. I believe it too. There's evidence of it right in front of me. I'm sitting in it. I'm using it. What's the shared reality? The fact-based, non-fantasy thinking reality of light bulbs and bone marrow transplants and cell phones. Cell phones. Space travel. Computers. You need to believe in things that aren't true. How else can they become? Well, in the 60s, people believed in things that weren't true. Nobody had been on the moon. We weren't really traveling in space. We were still trying to figure out how to get out there. But on television, we had starships and communicators. Well, now we've got computers in our homes. We've been to the moon, and we've got communicators. And there are, of course, those other things that you need to believe that aren't true, they aren't real. But you need to believe in them, otherwise they can't become. How else can you achieve heroism if you don't believe in heroes? And the line brought up justice, mercy, and duty, and other fine, high human aspirations toward behavioral perfection, I suppose, the social ideal. Ideals also have to be believed in. They may not be reality. No, you can't sift them out of the universe. You can't point to a troy ounce of justice. But striving toward the ideals, because you believe in them, maybe that improves reality. Just a tiny bit. But they were all, according to the character of Death, they're the big lies. They're the big lies to believe in. But it's not to say that belief in them is a bad thing. Because otherwise they don't exist. The starkest reality, even without the math, is to just go outside your house in the middle of winter. Particularly if you've got a clear night sky and look up. Cold winter starlight is, it may be beautiful, but it's really kind of anti-human. We have to believe in things that aren't real, because otherwise we'd just be, we'd be crawling into a hole in the side of the hill until the cold goes away, and we probably would have been gone a long time ago. There's also, it's kind of a two-edged sword, isn't it? Belief. Accepting a consensus reality. Accepting a lie in order to improve the social norm. It's a two-edged sword. Scientists have to believe in things that aren't real also. They have to believe before they were built in space stations. Otherwise, they'd never discover that tardigrades, water bears, can live in absolute zero and under extreme radiation and then come back and breed again. But it's like invention and discovery. Belief, faith, and something that isn't there, it's like invention and discovery. It can help you or it can kill you. We're the same creatures. We're the very same creatures that can power a city with atoms, or we can level a city with atoms. We're the very same creatures that can, because we have faith, because quite a few of us have faith in an almighty unseen being, illogical as that is, and unfounded as that is, because of that faith can get together and be inspired to teach a village how to read and help everybody living there to find and maintain clean water. Help the sick, heal the sick, get together and try and share that faith, form communities where people help each other and respect each other. that very same faith, though. If it's inexorably tied to dogged interpretation of ancient texts, if it bogs down in the minutia of that kind of thing, can decimate that very same village by forbidding condoms. Can help you, or it can kill you. It can power a city, or you can level the city. Lies, though. I was talking about lies. I was asking people, hey, did you spot any lies in the media? Did the media lie to you? Oh, of course they do. It's been going on since forever. Mainly to sell things. That's basically what people that are making the most amount of money using art, their art is being used to sell something, to put a fancy package around something that's mundane, maybe not even worth getting. Advertising, commercials, of course they lie. You expect them to. You learn about it at a very young age. You see the toy commercials, you see all the incredible things that these amazing super toys can do, and then you get them into the house, and of course you discover that they aren't nearly as big as you thought they were going to be, and they don't walk around by themselves or fly or talk to each other. It's all got to be powered by you. And it's a valuable lesson to learn. And yet advertising still works. But I wasn't talking about those. I think if I'm going to come up with an example, and I'm going to do it real quick and then just step away from it, because, like I said, yeah, welcome to the world, Anim. Of course the media lies. But I was listening to coverage of Hurricane Ike hitting Texas, and I heard the term used, people that ignored the warnings to leave. And I also heard the term people that refused to leave despite the warnings. And this was applied to people that were seen from the air, some communities that seemed to have a lot more people in them than they should because, for whatever reason, as if it were the easiest thing in the world to just get in your SUV and drive to another state. I don't think absolutely everybody that was left there refused to leave the coast of Texas or ignored the warnings. I don't know how easy it would be for me to just split. You know, if severe weather were heading towards me, if I were just willing to trust the lock on my door for however many weeks I'd be gone, if something like that were to hit my area. Or in some cases, just folks not actually even being able to afford it. But of course, there were evacuation buses, there were evacuation plans, places supposedly set up for people to go to, shelters to go stay in. But I didn't like hearing that because it was applied across the board to anybody that was left there. You ignored the warnings to leave, or you refused to leave despite the warnings. I didn't like seeing that. I also don't like seeing bank commercials and bank ads on the internet and on television. Banks used to actually want people to deposit their money in them. Once upon a time. You may not believe it, but a long, long time ago, banks actually wanted families to deposit their money in them. They don't anymore. They have no interest in family money unless it's over a certain amount. You also used to be able to go and get, if you had an account particularly, you used to be able to get a bank money order for nothing. They charge you nothing if you had an account. If you didn't have an account, it used to cost a quarter. Now it's, I don't even know what it is. I think the last time I tried it was $2.50 or $6.50 or something like that. or they won't issue a money order at all if you don't have an account with them. Now, if you're a family and you want to deposit money in a bank, there's got to be something in it for them. Now, what they want is business money. What they want is large amounts. They're no longer interested. But they will tell you, in their ads, how vitally important you are and how rich they're going to make you because you bank with them. Yeah, and so what? I think this, probably the bitterness that's sitting here as I reach the end of this episode, so far as the whole is media lying to you thing goes, are politicians lying to you? Do you find lies in newspapers and in advertisement? Of course. The bitterness is probably because I've allowed so much of that input to shape my view of reality. That the television actually has become this periscope from where I stand as to what's actually going on in the real world, when in fact it isn't, it can't be. There are too many people with agendas in control of the medium. And being bitter about it is a result of foolishly placed trust. So what I gotta do is just step back from it, stop being paranoid, and just think for myself. Realize that you can't place your trust in some sources of information, at least not all of it. You've got to be able to think for yourself. Look at the real world. Look at people, what they do and how they behave. And come to the realization that every head is a world. Absolutely everybody you see is their own reality and has their beliefs. And not all of them, in the long run, ultimately, are bad. Because if we didn't believe in the things that aren't real, we would not have been around this long, I don't think. Coming up with answers because we're curious about everything doesn't necessarily mean that we come up with the right answers. I don't know. I think I ended up being a little too abstract on this one. So I think maybe I'm just going to go to the closing music. And that, as we mentioned, is going to be a piece done by Dan. Dan, can I use your full name on the show here? I never actually asked you that. Or did I? I don't remember. I don't recall whether on that site you're identified with your full name or not, and I'm not gonna say it unless I can find it posted by you somewhere. I'm just gonna refer to you as Dan because I don't have your permission to use your full name. However, I am gonna play this song from Dan's group. Song is Fortress on the Moon. It is from the album Against All Flags. Check out the link to that album, which you can download in its entirety. At that link, Monuments of Leisure, and episode 66. Check out the Gooditongatongatongs. So listen here now, please, to Fortress on the Moon.
Getting better. You are safe. You are safe. You are safe.
Fortress on the Moon. Thank you, Dan. It's Caesar's turn to wait in the wings. I wonder. They've got a UFO at AT&T. Well, why not? I kind of doubt it. But why not? Well, if they don't, and if we never actually find one anywhere, I guess we're going to have to make one ourselves. Well, we've reached the end of episode 67, and there isn't going to be a specific question for episode 68, rather an invitation to write in, call in on the reindeer line, area code 206-350-7809. Or hop on the forums and let your voice be heard there. There's many ways to get in touch with the show. Commenting on what you heard in this episode, any of the questions or topics or subjects from any of the older episodes. No specific question for 68. What I am going to say is I've got something of a situation going on so far as scheduling is concerned. The podcast is not going to come out as regularly as I would like it to. I'm going to recognize that as a simple fact. Life intrudes, particularly lately. There might be more variety involved, though. I'm still going to strive towards getting some open-ended series chats together. There may or may not be some actual play recordings of Spirit of the Century. Not sure about that yet, but that's a possibility. It's the timing of it, though, that I think I should make everybody listening aware. I don't intend to let another month go by before something shows up on the feed. Sorry about that. But the regularity is going to suffer, and it's mainly because I'm in a situation where I'm getting as much done as possible to get myself hired and get myself in a better position to be hired. That includes all manner of self-improvement and all manner of improvement of my portfolio, and it's taking up a great deal of time. So I'll just leave it at that. IDDFOS isn't going anywhere. It's just going to be a little bit less regular than I like it, and maybe less regular than you like it, and I do apologize for that. In the meantime, I'm just going to say thank you very, very much to Fred Trellis of the Harmony Factory podcast for writing in. Thank you very much, James. Thank you, Dan. Thank you, Agent Desilu. And thank you very much, Sarah, for writing into this show. And thank you for listening. I hope you'll join us for episode 68. It will be coming out, just not positive when. But until then, I hope everything goes very well for you, and until then, best of days.
This is a thought, a thought, a thought. Remember, listen for another adventure of
International Detective Dragons from Outer Space.